Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated November 8, 2016, Election Day. And the first articles are on the front page. The headline is Early Voters Out the Door. Now, this has a dateline of Springfield. Election Day is finally here. But a large share of Illinois voters won't be standing in line today at their polling places. More than 1.6 million people across the state had already cast their ballots as of Monday morning, according to the Illinois State Board of Elections. That's more than 20% of Illinois' record 8 million registered voters. Since late September, voters have cast ballots by mail, in person, at early voting sites, or using grace period registration, which allows people to register and vote at the same time. Spokesman Jim Tenuto said the Elections Board wasn't sure what to expect this time around after early voting options were expanded by a bill former Governor Pat Quinn signed into law in January 2015, shortly before leaving office. Quote, I think we expected it to be big, Tenuto said. He noted that the nearly 1.3 million early ballots cast in person by voters who were already registered broke the early voting record of nearly 1.2 million set during the 2012 presidential election. Early totals continued to rise Monday as people showed up to voting sites across the state. Voters also have until Election Day to postmark their mail-in ballots or drop them off at their location election authorities. Quote, we've got people out the door, Macon County Clerk Steve Bean said Monday, adding that about 600 people voted per day over the weekend. Bean said he expected 900 to cast ballots Monday. As of Monday morning, 12,148 ballots had already been cast in the county, accounting for 16% of registered voters, according to the State Elections Board. McLean County Clerk Kathy Michael said the scene was similar at her office, which oversees voting in the whole county except for the city of Bloomington. Quote, we've just had a line all day, Michael said, adding that about 2,000 people had cast ballots over the past 4 days. A total of 9,460 county voters had cast ballots as of Monday morning, along with another 10,335 Bloomington residents, according to the State Elections Board. That accounts for about 15% of registered county voters and 21% of Bloomington's registered voters. The early turnout in Rock Island County is among the highest in the state, with 26% of the county's registered voters, or 25,683 people, having already voted. With 5,935 ballots cast as of Monday, early turnouts in Jackson County was nearly 17%. The 5,421 ballots cast early in Coles County represented nearly 18% of voters there. The overall number of registered voters statewide will increase today because this is the first general election during which residents of the state's most populated areas can register and vote on Election Day at their local polling places. Residents throughout the state can register and vote at the offices of their local election authorities. Meanwhile, Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan announced Monday afternoon that nearly 2,000 200 attorneys and investigators from her office will be monitoring polling places statewide on Election Day. Voters should contact the Attorney General's office if they observe suspected improper or illegal activities. Voters in the Chicago area and Northern Illinois can call 866-536-3496. And voters in Central and Southern Illinois can call 866-559-6812. Two photos accompany this article. One shows the voters who are waiting in a line that went down the hall from the polling site and outside during early voting at the Macon County Office Building. And indeed, there must be a good 30 people in line, and the sidewalk has been cordoned off with a makeshift chain fence so that the people will not spill out into the road. Another one shows a little girl, Claire Tanner, age 3, who holds her father's voter registration card while they wait in line. That article was written by Dan Petrella, who is the Herald Review Springfield Bureau Chief. An article on the same page in the front is this headline: Many first-time voters noted in county. County clerk cautions about partisan apparel, possible long waits. And this was written by Allison Petty. It'll all be over soon. What has been widely viewed as one of the most contentious and stressful political seasons in recent memory is set to come to a close after America votes today. More than 13,000 Macon County residents have already cast their ballots, County Clerk Steve Bean said Monday. Quite a few people are voting for the first time, Bean said. Because of the high interest in the election, people should be prepared to exercise patience at their polling places today. Many have sacrificed over the course of history to earn and protect those voting rights, he said. Quote, that's what people have got to realize, what people have given up to get this right, Bean said. Quote, I think standing in line one election every 4 years is not that difficult. Voters should also keep in mind that they cannot wear T-shirts, buttons, hats, or other attire that promotes a candidate to the polling place. Those who do so will be asked to either remove the item or, in the case of shirts, turn them inside out. Additionally, Bean said some first-time voters have attempted to vote for more than one candidate for president, for instance, selecting every candidate except one they don't like. Anyone who attempts to do this will have to fill out another ballot, this time choosing just one candidate. The presidential contest between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton has proven polarizing for many, but Illinoisans have also seen a heated U.S. Senate race with incumbent Republican Mark Kirk against U.S. Representative Tammy Duckworth, a Democrat. Her party has seen the race as key in their efforts to retake control of the Senate. In Macon County, the race for state's attorney has drawn the most attention. Democrat Jay Scott, seeking his second term, has emphasized his 29 years of experience as a prosecutor. Republican Dan Hassinger has alleged that the office has developed a toxic culture under Scott. Further complicating the race is an investigation into allegations of misconduct in Scott's office, which was initiated by Republican Macon County Board Member Greg Mattingly's petition for a special prosecutor. Scott has denied the allegations and characterized them as politically motivated, while Hassinger has said he was not involved in filing this petition. Macon County residents also must decide whether to approve an increase in the law enforcement safety tax by 0.25%, meaning an extra quarter for every $100 spent. The money would go to the Macon County Sheriff's Office, which has said there will be layoffs if the tax increase doesn't pass. All Illinois voters will also be asked to decide about the lockbox amendment to the state constitution, which would mean that the state can't use money dedicated to transportation, such as tolls and gas tax proceeds, for other purposes. Residents of the 13th Congressional District have been treated to relatively calm, issue-based rhetoric in that race between incumbent Republican Rodney Davis of Taylorville and his Democratic challenger, Mark Wicklund of Decatur. For state representative, Macon County residents don't have many options. In two districts, the 96th and the 102nd House districts, there's only one person running. In the 101st House district, incumbent Republican Bill Mitchell faces a Democrat, Christine Law of Forsyth, who has not actively campaigned for the post. For Macon County Board, three districts, Districts 1, 5, and 7, have contested races, with nine candidates vying for five seats. In Districts 2, 3, 4, and 6, the incumbent board members are running unopposed. The race for Macon County Circuit Clerk, is between incumbent Lois Durbin, who has served two terms since 2008, and Brian Hott, son of former circuit clerk Kathy Hott and a former office employee. A photograph below this article shows Michelle Lang in the front and Linda Hall just behind her arriving at the front of the line for early voting at the Macon County office building. Also on the first page, we find this article related to city government. It was written by Chris Luvardi, and the headline is as follows: Fee increases level property taxes in city budget plan. City of Decatur officials reveal plans Monday to balance next year's budget without increasing taxes, including keeping its property tax rate the same as last year. At the same time, City Manager Tim Gleason and Financial Management Director Greg Ziantara outlined a proposal to increase a list of fees in an effort to recover the costs of issuing certain licenses, including for liquor, ambulance, taxi, and video gaming, along with adding an annual hotel motel fee. The city is anticipating expenditures in the general fund of $67.1 million with $67.5 million in revenue. That would leave a general fund surplus of $400,000. As Ziantara said, a priority is to build more cash reserves. The Decatur City Council approved a budget for this year, with general funds accounting for $65.5 million. Quote, "We are moving in the right direction, and it is exciting," Gleason said. "We're building cash reserves. It's a document we can be proud of." The council meeting was the first time for community members to hear details of the proposed budget. Additional open sessions have been scheduled for 9 a.m. Wednesday, November 9th, and 2 p.m. Wednesday, November 16th, in the Council Chambers on the third floor of the Decatur Civic Center, Gary K. Anderson Plaza. Pardon me, that is the address, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza, for residents to find out more information before the Council moves further through the budget approval process. The Council is expected to again discuss the proposal during its next meeting, scheduled for 5:30 p.m. Monday, November 21st. The total budget, including debt funds and categories outside the general fund, is nearly $173 million. The current year's budget totals $160 million. Ziantara said the Council had been asked to consider changes to the fee structure during a previous study session. The cost of issuing certain permits has been greater than the fee the city collects, Ziantara said. Quote, "We're not trying to generate revenue off the proposed increases," Gleason said. "We're simply trying to recover our true costs." The proposal would include a $75 ambulance fee increase, $300 vehicle for hire increase, $355 video gaming terminal increase, and a list of several others. The city currently does not have a hotel motel fee, but Ziantara said that would add a $400 annual charge in an attempt to cover the costs of inspections. Some concerns were raised about the fee proposals, including the $550 liquor license increase. The cost for a liquor license is currently $2,000, with the cost to issue $2,466, according to information the city provided. The proposed liquor license fee would be $2,550. Quote, "Some of the mom-and-pop operations have to literally break open the piggy banks," Councilman Jerry Dawson said. He would rather the fees be assessed for establishments with video gaming terminals than have the liquor license fee raised. Gleason said the city's property tax rate would remain the same as it has been, as it collects 15% of the total Decatur residents pay in taxes. Quote, "We're going to stay the course from where it was at last year," Gleason said. "It's the same rate as the mid-1990s. Past councils have reduced it. It's just now climbing to where it was in the mid-90s. Decisions made during the budgeting process for this year are helping the city avoid again asking for tax increases," Gleason said. The council last year approved raising the hotel use tax and utility tax, while later raising its property tax levy and adding a local gas tax. Quote, "We didn't want to go back to the community to increase taxes," Gleason said. "This will allow us to focus on the financial impact of the EPA consent order." The city still faces uncertainty as it works to meet federally mandated sewer system requirements. More than $40 million worth of work in the sewer system is anticipated, a figure Gleason said the city has worked with the EPA to keep in check. "We're not going to have any choice," Gleason said. "They've been very reasonable. An increase in the city's sewer fee is likely," although Gleason wasn't ready to reveal details of proposed changes. He said that should be coming soon. For the 2017 budget, the city is anticipating adding 5 positions, including members of a 4-person team to clean the sewer system as part of efforts to meet the EPA requirements. Another position will be added to manage the accounting for the newly implemented local motor fuel tax. Under the budget proposal, Gleason said the city is not expecting to delay or postpone projects or equipment replacement. A leading focus included in the budget proposal is on neighborhood development, Gleason said. The city is expecting an increase in property values, which he said would generate a $300,000 increase in revenue. Of that, Gleason proposes putting $150,000 to $200,000 toward redevelopment efforts. He doesn't want the city to become a landlord, but it can focus on ways to make the area more attractive and, in turn, raise property values. As part of the plan, Gleason wants to provide a significant investment toward demolitions. Quote, "We haven't had the resources to dedicate," Gleason said. "We could have $1 million to dedicate for major demos, the likes of which the city has never seen before." Additionally, despite concerns raised from community members and Councilman Bill Faber, the council approved an agreement to raise Gleason's pay. The plan includes a 3% raise retroactive to March 23rd, the one-year anniversary of Gleason starting work for the city, and a 2% raise effective January 1st. In addition, Gleason will have the ability on December 31st to exchange up to 10 unused vacation days for compensation. Faber said he couldn't approve of the message the raise sends, with some residents objecting to the manager's job performance since starting the position in 2015. Quote, "I would like for him to be successful," Faber said. "Our job is to manage the manager." Other council members spoke in favor of Gleason's job performance during what they consider a difficult start to his tenure. Quote, "It has been a more than challenging year," Mayor Julie Wolf said. "With all that has gone on, the city manager has done a good job of leading us." Councilwoman Lisa Gregory said Gleason's actions have helped to move the city forward. "We haven't been doing things the same way just because that's how it's been done historically," Gregory said. "It's no fluke we find ourselves in a much better position going into 2017 than we were heading into 2016, and that's because of the city manager leading the way." One of the initiatives Gleason has been focusing on was approved during the meeting. The city is planning to receive a $330,000 grant from the Howard G. Buffett Foundation to cover much of the cost for the second phase of a city-owned fiber network. By leading the way with ownership of the fiber network, Gleason said the city can create an opportunity to benefit other government entities and nonprofit organizations within the community. Despite early opposition to the plan for the city to be so closely involved in the fiber network, Gleason said the investment will be worthwhile. Quote, "At the end of the day, we have landed in a great position," Gleason said. The city would contribute up to $105,000 toward the project, which is expected to lower its costs for broadband access and provide opportunities for increased use of technology. Moving on to page 3, we find this article dealing with education. It was written by Valerie Wells, and the headline is High School Interns Program Enters Third Year. Hosting a high school intern was a positive experience for Ameren, Illinois. A previous intern now has a summer job with the company, said Tony Wilkins, Superintendent of Administration. Ameren participates in the program with the hope that those interns will pursue college and career in the engineering field and come back to Ameren to work full-time. Wilkins was at MacArthur High School on Monday to interview prospective interns in the district's Inspired Futures program. MacArthur and Eisenhower High Schools are participating. Decatur schools are in their third year of placing high school seniors in local businesses as interns during the spring semester, said Ashley Grained, distance learning coordinator. Quote, "It's just a really exciting time," Grained said. "In September, we brought all of the business partners out to talk to the students, and then they had to turn their applications in, and the employers actually choose the interns to come on board. Starting in January, students will be on the job in the afternoons 3 days a week," and Grained said they won't be doing busy work, but real jobs, learning real skills. Quote, "We have a lot going on at Dyna Graphics," said Amanda Drain, marketing director, who interviewed students for an internship there. Quote, "I don't always know what's going on, and we heard about this great opportunity to get students in our building to see what we do and help promote our business as well. To get them some work experience in social media, photography, customer service, and shipping. Being nervous is inevitable when sitting for an interview, but Lyric Tyus was expecting to talk to one person, not five, on Monday at MacArthur. She said it went very well, however. Quote, "I've done job interviews before, so it wasn't much different than that," she said. She's hoping to intern at Independence Point, working with the small children, which is something she has experience in doing. Quote, "I plan on majoring in business and psychology when I go off to school," she said. "I plan on becoming a child psychologist, and you have to have a master's degree. So I figure working in school setting as a counselor or something until I could go on." Caleb Berger wants to pursue electrical engineering, but agreed with the Caterpillar Inc. representatives during his interview that exploring all kinds of engineering is a good idea, just to be sure. Quote, "I really wanted to put my name out there and understand what I'd be doing outside of college," he said about his decision to sign up for the internship program. Quote, "You get stuck in bookwork and everything like that. I want to know what engineers do outside of school." We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.